Thanks for listening to The Rivers Podcast. For more information on this teaching, visit our website at theriver.info.
Good morning. My name is Daryl Greathouse, and Rob asked me to fill in this week while he's in sunny Florida. I was particularly jealous yesterday. I was in a bike race, and about the last 3 or 4 miles, the wind was 20 miles an hour and spitting snow, and I was wondering, what am I doing in this state? So I'm a little bit jealous. Now, we're beginning a new series today, where for the next 4 weeks, we're going to look at the life of a guy named Peter, who is one of Jesus' closest confidants. But before I kind of get into the message for this morning, I feel like I need to give you a little bit of detail about who I am, because I'm going to tell some stories and you need a little bit of context, just in case you don't know. So I'm going to use 2 adjectives that my children use to describe me. The first adjective is old. This coming May, here in just a few weeks, it will be 25 years since I graduated veterinary school at the University of Illinois. Anytime you've been doing a career for long enough that you don't measure it in years or decades, but in a quarter century, you're old, okay? And my children are now old. My oldest is graduating Michigan State this year. My next oldest graduates next year. My oldest son graduates high school this year. My baby, the little tiny one, is a freshman in high school. And if I go in the back in the nursery and I see how packed the nursery and preschool are, I recognize I'm well above the median at this place. Okay, so that's the first adjective. The second adjective that my children would use to describe me is that I'm slow at everything that I do. I'm slow when I drive. I now have all of my kids are driving, and every one of them will look at the speedometer and say, "Really, Dad? You can't go better than that?" I ride bikes with my oldest son, and he, you know, if he was going to do the same distance as I would, he would be waiting in the parking lot for a long period of time. So instead, I think he tries to do double and still beat me back to the lot. And recently, we were on a snowboarding trip, and I'm going down the mountain, and 3 of my kids won't even hang with me because I'm just too slow to even be seen with anywhere. But one was nice enough to stay with me, but she would go a little bit down the mountain, stop, wait on me, a little bit down the mountain, stop, and wait on me. Now, I don't think I can fix the old problem, but I'm pretty sure the slow problem is all equipment related, right? I mean, all I need is a lighter bike, better wheels, better snowboard equipment. I mean, that's all I need, and the speed will come right with that better equipment, or at least that's what I like to tell myself. So Rob asked me to speak about Peter and said, "You can talk whatever you want, say whatever you want about Peter," and one story immediately came to mind. It's a story that bothers me. It's a story with a question that I don't know that I have really resolved. But it's a story that I think I have to tell you a second story for us to really understand the context of. A few years ago, I was in my office. My wife and I own a veterinary hospital in Portage. And I had a little bit of downtime between patients or between surgeries, I don't remember which, and I was on Craigslist. I was shopping for gear, okay? And I was looking at bikes, and just in case any of you are going to talk to my wife later, in case she's at this service, I was looking for a friend, because I have friends who need upgrades in their bike gear. I don't need anything different in my garage. I don't need any more bikes, but some of my friends do. So I was looking on Craigslist, and a different kind of ad came up, and I don't remember how I saw this, but rather than trying to sell me something, somebody was actually looking for things to be donated to them. This young couple had gotten a school bus somehow and were wanting to retrofit it into some sort of a mobile apartment. And they were looking for kitchen cabinets and a sink and plumbing and lumber to build beds and mattresses. And their stated goal was that they wanted to go around the country, actually the ad said around the world and live out of this bus and tell people about love and yoga. And I read that ad and I went out and I told some of the ladies that I work with about that, and they were appalled at the idea that anyone would want to be trapped in a school bus with their significant other for that length of time. I had a different reaction. Remember, I told you I have 2 daughters at Michigan State, and I just suddenly envisioned one of them calling me up and saying, "Hey, Dad, I met a guy." And he's really cool, and he wears a tie-dye shirt and has dreadlocks and smells like patchouli, and we're going to build up this school bus, or we're going to quit school, or we're going to drop out and leave everything, and we're going to go teach the world about love and yoga. Great idea, honey. Fantastic. Just all that money wasted. That's the story that I think of when I read a story out of the book of Matthew. So there's four books at the beginning of the New Testament: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew is the very first one, and in the fourth chapter of the book of Matthew, Jesus is just getting going. He's just starting to go out on his teaching ministry, and he walks by this lake called the Sea of Galilee, and he walks up and he sees this guy named Peter and said, "Hey, Peter, come and follow me." And he leaves his nets and follows him. You see, what's interesting to me is there's no backstory. There's no first interview, second interview, a third working interview, and the two agree on a contract then about what the employment might look like or this relationship's going to be. There's no backstory. There's no explanation given. It's out of nowhere, before the miracles, before the great teachings. He just says, "Come and follow me," and he does. And I wonder why. Why did he leave him? If you grew up in the church, it's kind of hard to look at this passage fresh because you know the end of the story. You know about the resurrection. We celebrated last week at Easter. You know about Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. You know about making a blind guy see and a crippled person walk. You know those things. And so, of course, you'd follow Jesus. This is Jesus. Everybody would follow Jesus. But this was just some dude walking by the shore saying, "Come and follow me," and he left his nets. And maybe you've already figured this out. The reason I want to know the answer to the question, because I wonder, would I have left my nets? Would you? It's an awful lot like that Craigslist story, really. Can't you see Peter going back to his wife and saying, "Hey, honey, I met a guy. He's got really long hair. He wears a long white robe. And we're going to go around Palestine, and we're going to tell people about how much God loves them." Okay. What are we going to eat? Well, we're hoping people give us food wherever we go. Fantastic. Where are we going to sleep? Well, we're hoping the same people give us a place to stay at night. And if not, the stars are beautiful out at night. We can sleep under the stars. Can you see how the conversation would have gone? Why did Peter leave the nets and follow Jesus? Okay, first, I think we got to think about what these nets really were. What were his nets? What was his boat? I've got this picture in my mind. I've been able to go on three trips with people from the river to Odetel, Uganda. And it's where we work and partner with this village. It's a fascinating place. I'd love to tell you about it. That's kind of a whole other topic for a different time. It's a really long journey to get there. It's 8 hours from either Chicago or Detroit to get to Amsterdam, then another 8 hours to get to Entebbe, which is where the airport is in Uganda. With all the layovers and everything, it's about 20 hours of travel, and every time I've arrived there, it's been the middle of the night, it's dark, you're disoriented, you're exhausted, you smell bad, and all you want to do is go to sleep. And you go on this bus ride and down streets that really aren't lit up very well, not by our standards at least, and you come to this hotel, you're disoriented, you pull the mosquito net around you, and you go to sleep. But in the morning, I wake up, and I always wake up early in the morning. It doesn't matter what time zone it is. It's just the way that I'm wired. And I walk out on the front porch, and I see that across the street is Lake Victoria, this massive expanse of water. And you see all these little tiny boats on it, and they are small, handmade boats. On the shore, there were some there that I saw once that they were beat up. They were valuable to the person who made them. Lumber is scarce. It had to have been even more scarce in the time of Jesus. I mean, there's really no trees that you can find around the Sea of Galilee. So the lumber was valuable. The boat was valuable. There was care and precision put into it. But the nets? It's interesting. The last time I was there, there was two guys who put a net out into the lake. They put that net out there the night before, and they were sitting on the ground, and they were pulling the net in hand over fist. They must have been there half an hour pulling this huge, long net, bringing in their catch that they would either eat themselves or they'd sell to a restaurant to provide for their families. And I thought about the value of the nets themselves. Now, in Uganda, they can probably order it on Amazon and get it from China for not very much, but in Jesus' time, every fiber was natural, every fiber was hand-spun, every knot was hand-tied. It was all material, not like nylon that would rot if it wasn't appropriately dried. And I started to think about the value of those nets, the value of the boats, the economic security that are provided. It's like a plumber's trucks with all the solder and pipe fittings and little purple stuff you put around PVC pipes, and the electrician's truck with all the wires and the cutting tools and the little colored doodads that you use. I thought about the value of that to the person who owns it. It's their socioeconomic status. It's who they are. It defines a part of what they can be in this world. And yet Jesus called Peter to leave it. Peter, I don't think, knew it at the time, but he ended up leaving a lot more than just that. Peter grew up in a very religiously divisive world where the Jewish people themselves were fighting over every little line of the law, every little rule, and they built these boxes that you had to be inside certain boxes to be okay, and this box argued with that box, and that box argued with this one, and Jesus called people away from all of that. So one of Peter's nets was his socioeconomic status, but one of Peter's nets was his religious belief system. One of his nets was his view on race. The Jewish people at that time were very racist. They didn't care for the other people around them. They had tried to eliminate the Canaanites completely through, quite honestly, genocide. They had this long-going feud with the Samaritans that were part Jewish and part another race, and they couldn't stand them. And then they had this oppressive, outside, Gentile-hated country as a military power occupying their land, the Romans. And yet Jesus went around and healed the child of a Canaanite woman, healed the servant of a Roman military officer, and sat down at a well next to a Samaritan who was also a woman in a culture that, much like the Middle East now, didn't value women and men didn't speak to women. And yet Jesus did. In fact, he had large numbers of women that were a part of his troop, a part of his inner circle that accompanied him across his ministry. See, when Peter left his nets, he left a lot, didn't he? It made me wonder, what are your nets? What are mine? Certainly, one of my nets is a piece of paper from the University of Illinois that gives me the permission to get a license from the state of Michigan to perform certain services that I can charge a fee for. And that gives me a certain socioeconomic status that allows me to provide for my family and allows me to pay for tuition at Michigan State, right? That's one of my nets. What is yours? Maybe one of our nets is our religious box. The beliefs that we have, that if we believe this about God, if we believe these things, we're okay. Everyone outside of that box, everyone outside of that net is not, but we're fine inside that box. What are your nets? Maybe one of your nets is simply your story, and it doesn't even have to be a good story. It can be a story of abuse or neglect or addiction, but it's your story. And you hold on to it because you're scared to leave it and because it defines you and it's what you can say about yourself, and you live inside that box with those nets. What are your nets? 50% of you have this next net. You have a Y chromosome. And in this country, in this world, that gives you a certain advantage. When I walk into one of my examination rooms in my office, I have a different authority, and people look at me differently than they do my wife, who's been practicing just as long as I have and is just as competent as I do. Nationwide, in my profession, which is now a female-dominated profession, men earn more money than women do because people listen to them more, because there's an advantage to a Y chromosome. I know that my 15-year-old son can go places at night on Michigan State's campus and my 22-year-old daughter can. And that's just in this country, which is far above the rest of the world. I had a friend who had an exchange student from Thailand, and she described how that girl was shocked that she had any freedom at all outside the house. In Thailand, it's all walled complexes, barbed wire in the top or broken glass in the top of the concrete walls around a house. The driver would come in the morning, pick her up, and drive her to school. The driver would pick her up at school and drive her back home. There's an advantage to being a male. What are your nets? Maybe one of your nets is simply the pigment of your skin, or in my case, the very obvious lack thereof. There's an advantage to being white. We don't like to talk about it, but there's an advantage to being white. There's a plethora of statistics out there now about the economic advantage, the advantage in the criminal justice system of being white over being a person of color. I know that I just saw a statistic, it was 2 weeks ago, it's the only one I'm going to share with you, that the child of a wealthy African-American family is more likely to end up incarcerated than the child of a poor white family. I have a friend who does work in the Edison neighborhood, and he talks about the way the criminal justice system looks at people. He described a time when two of the people that do work with him, got in a car together. One happened to be African-American, one was white. And the cops pulled them over because in the Edison neighborhood, that means a crack deal. On the other hand, my friend, who was probably, it'd be an interesting contest to see who is paler, but he's about as pale as I am, he drives a car with only one headlight, on purpose, waiting to see how long it'll take him to get pulled over in that neighborhood, and he hasn't gotten pulled over yet. There's advantages to color, to gender, to the things you believe about yourself, to your socioeconomic status. Those are all things that allow us to feel like we're better than somebody else, more secure than somebody else. Those are our nets. And yet Jesus said to Peter, come and follow me. Now we're back to the original question. Why did he leave? Why did he leave? I've heard one person explain it that it was every Jewish boy's desire to be a rabbi. That's that kind of their hierarchy and their social structure to be a rabbi was up here. And so if a rabbi came and wanted to tutor you, you were of course going to follow. I'm not sure if I quite believe that. I mean, Jesus was an uncredentialed rabbi. As far as we know, he had no official training from anybody. And a rabbi's authority, a rabbi's reputation was by who they were trained by. We see that in another place in the Bible, a guy named Paul. Paul was trying to explain to people how Jewish he was, how much authority he had with the Jewish people. And he said, I was trained under the best rabbi there was. I was trained under a guy named Gamaliel. If you do a quick little Google search, Gamaliel was the grandson of an extremely famous rabbi called Hillel the Great. There are Hillel centers for Jewish students on many of the universities in this country. Paul was saying, I was trained at Harvard Law. Jesus, he got a degree from some upstart internet university based in the Caribbean. Would you leave your nets for that? I've wondered personally if maybe it was a force of personality. That somehow when you were in the presence of Jesus, you felt so loved and respected that you wanted to just be with him. You wanted to follow him. You wanted to hang with him. And that may be it for some people. There were lots of people who were in the presence of Jesus who didn't feel it and didn't follow. It wasn't a universal thing. But certainly that has some validity for many people, especially those who are more intuitive, more feeling perhaps than what I am. Because remember, I told you I'm science-based. I'm math-based. I think in terms of flow charts. I mean, I've got algorithms going through my head for all these disease processes in animals. You know, you're here, and you do this test, and then you do that, and you do this treatment. If that doesn't work, then you do this. If it does work, you do that. I think in terms of very precise evidence. For me, I think I would need more than a feeling. For me, the best answer comes from not Matthew or Mark or Luke, but from John, the fourth book. In the sixth chapter, Jesus is teaching. And he's got a large group of people around him. And he starts kind of getting crazy, quite honestly. He doesn't always like to explain his teaching. He wants people to think. He wants people to think differently and outside the box. So Jesus starts saying that unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will not really understand what I'm about. And again, if you've been in the church for a while, he was talking symbolically about what we call communion, where we take a piece of bread and we dip it in juice and we use it to remember the fact that he died for us. But Jesus didn't give any backstory. He wanted people to think differently, and some people just thought he'd gone wackadoodle. They thought he was crazy, and they started to leave. And then he turned to Peter. He said, you guys going to go too? And Peter said, where else would we go, Jesus? You have the words of life. You have the words of life. See, I don't think Peter lived in a world that different than ours. It was a world of social injustice. It was a world of poverty. It was a world where disease claimed incredible numbers of lives. It was a world of violence. The occupying Roman army enforced their rule with crucifixions on a routine basis. But Peter, in some ways, had an advantage because Peter only saw a small part of the world. He didn't have this and the BBC News app to pull up and see the injustices that occur worldwide, about Boko Haram and the kidnappings of girls in Nigeria, or how South Sudan doesn't have the money to pay their soldiers, so they allow them to get part of their soldiers' pay by raping women, or about the human trafficking problem in this country, or about, it's updated every 15 minutes, I can get something new. And when Peter looked at that world, and when I look at this world, and I hear the teachings of Jesus, I echo with Peter, it's the only hope for the world. Where else would I go? When Jesus said to love your neighbor as yourself, he was looking at a way to end that cycle of violence. When he said that we need to start doing what we call the golden rule, where we treat other people the way we want to be treated, and people weren't segregated into religious belief systems, genders, political belief systems, race, they were simply people. That you start treating other people the way you want to be treated yourself. That when you want to end violence and someone slaps you across the cheek, you turn the other cheek. When someone wants to take one of your clothes, you give them the second one to go with it. That Jesus taught a different way of thinking. That people are people and we need to start treating them the way we want to be treated ourselves. And that is the only reason that I can see to leave the nets behind. What would we start to do on a journey of leaving our nets? I'll tell you, I'm an information guy. Not everybody is. There's experiential learners and there are book learners. And I start with a book learning experience, so we'll start there. There's books that we can read to start to understand exactly what our nets are. There's books about race, like Lies Your Teacher Told You, which was recommended to me by a friend. It's a fantastic look at the systemic racism, not just towards African Americans, but the extermination of the Native Americans and the lies that were told us to justify it. In it, you can learn that Woodrow Wilson decided to become a member of the KKK while he was in office, and how his administration systemically removed all African Americans from public office at that time. And there's a lot more. You can read the book that I haven't read yet, The New Jim Crow. I honestly don't have the heart to read it yet, but I need to read it to understand the deliberate incarceration of a generation of African Americans. If you want to read how gender changes you, read the book Half the Sky. Fantastic book of a look at the plight of women's issues across the world. Or if you want a simple book, I Am Malala is fantastic. It's a book you can read to your daughters. In fact, there's even a child's version of that book. Malala was simply a girl in Pakistan who wanted to go to school. All she wanted to do was learn. And she was very outspoken, was on the radio and TV, and the Taliban targeted her as an enemy and one day walked onto her school bus and shot her in the face. She survived and went on to win the Nobel Prize for Peace. But the remarkable thing about Malala is actually the beginning of the story. She grew up in a Pashtun Pakistani family that was very traditional. 300 years, her family genealogy was written out, and never was a woman's name written in the genealogy. In fact, in Pakistan, when a girl is born, the other mothers come over to console the birth mother on the birth of a daughter. But when Malala was born, her dad took out a pen with blue ink and wrote her name in the book. He left his nets. He started to leave the past June culture and his gender behind and look at things differently. And if you want to see what that looks like, watch the YouTube video of her acceptance speech before the Nobel Peace Prize Committee in Stockholm and see her father beaming in the front row. Now, there comes a time where you need to quit getting information, you need to move, and you need to act. And some of you are experiential learners, and that's the way you would work anyway. Go out with Rod Tucker on street ministry. Hand out chili and popsicles to people that are different than you and just talk to them. Start to see them as people. Just start to see them as people. Sign up for one of our teams that's going to Guatemala. I know they're taking signups now for a trip in January of next year where you can be with little kids whose parents are trying to make a living off scavenging a dump. And you can go and you can do street ministry in some of the sketchiest parts of the world you will ever see. And you will love people that you never thought you would see before. Go to Odetel. Get out and experience a different part of the world. And sometimes it's a really small thing that can start to make you realize that you had a net you didn't even know you had. I had an experience like that, and that's the last story. But I had an experience like that a number of years ago, and all I was doing was shopping for Mother's Day. I wanted breakfast burritos for Mother's Day morning. It's something we like to make. And this is years ago, because it's before I became a vegetarian, but we were looking for chorizo. You know, I was looking for it. I was going to surprise Evelyn. So I went to a really authentic place in the Edison neighborhood. And I pulled up and I parked in the car. And it wasn't that nice a car, but it was decent. It was an older Suburban. I parked my car and I recognized that I looked different. I was driving something different. And it was a different part of the world. And I felt uncomfortable. And I didn't like the fact that I felt uncomfortable. There was something about it that bothered me. The strange thing is, another car pulled up next to me. It was a nicer car. The people were better dressed. Ironically, the people were African American, and yet I suddenly felt okay because they were more like me than the people I felt I was around in the community. And that was just shopping for sausage. And I got exposed that I had an issue that I needed to deal with, that I had a net that I needed to walk away from. So, River, what are your nets? What do you hold on to for security? What makes you feel better or superior to other people? And are you willing to step away from them and start looking at people as people, like Jesus taught Peter to do?
Thanks for listening. For more information, check us out online at theriver.info.